Hi, and welcome to the 38th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm John Neff.
And I'm Damon Lavrins.
And today we're going to bring you pretty much all the automotive news that happened in the last couple of days. We've had a little bit of technical difficulty with the podcast over the past week.
We have great intentions. We're trying to bring it to you every week, but unfortunately, technology hasn't been quite dealing with us nicely recently.
No. I mean, we lost a couple of good episodes, quite frankly, and so if it sounds like we're skipping all of last week's news, we're not doing it intentionally.
We already covered it. You just didn't hear it.
Yeah,
that's
you just...
the problem, so.
I wish it could have been there. It was really
good.
Yeah,
honestly.
One of the best ones. But before we get into this podcast, as always, I want to give Volvo, the sponsor of the Autoblog podcast, a chance to say a few words. The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information. Okay, now that we're back, I guess the first thing we'll talk about is what made probably the most news on Autoblog today, which was the Bentley.
Yes. You bastard.
You know, more people have called me a bastard today than I think ever in my life. And I didn't do anything.
And I'm sure your parents were married, too. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
but
they are.
Yeah.
Happily. So,
how did you score this? I mean, what's the? Just give us a little bit of the backstory.
You know, the backstory is that Ford has always been, I know this, it's weird that this story starts with Ford, but Ford has always been progressive in the sense that they, you know, very much support the automotive journalism that's going on in the web. Mm-hmm. And so we've all often got a lot of support from Ford, and the main PR guy there, whose name is David Reuter, mm-hmm. he was great. He was really nice to us there and just gave us a lot of opportunities to kind of show people what we could do. He actually left Ford and went to Bentley.
Ah.
And since, you know, we were, he was a nice guy. He sent me an email saying, hello, you know, I'm over here now if you ever need me. I sent him an email and asked. I mean, you know, couldn't hurt.
You're on good terms with him? Why not?
Yeah, exactly. And he, I think, just...
Did you specifically ask for the Continental Flying Spur, or did you just say, can you just send me a Bentley, any Bentley, and
I said,
take it out for a week?
I said, I don't even know if you have a media fleet. I have no idea how you work it. But he said, yeah, we do have cars, and, you know, they do it a little bit differently than the larger companies, but
okay.
He said, give me some dates. And I realized I had a wedding to go to the next month. So I was like, how about this weekend? And he's like, sure. So
it's very reminiscent. I'm not sure if you read Automobile, but one of their writers got a Ford GT to take to his high school reunion.
That would be Ezra Dyer.
Ezra Dyer. One of my favorites. I couldn't remember his name off the top of my head. But yeah, that's as soon as I started reading this, I was like, oh, that's just too damn funny.
Yeah, it was much like that. And I didn't want to write it so much like what it was like to, you know, take it to a wedding. But, I mean, it really was like that, where I was just amazed at the reaction this thing got. And
right.
Even before you told them the price and after you told them the price, I mean, they just – so many people have never stood around or sat in or been driven in a car that costs that much.
Right, and, yes. Especially out in Ohio where, you know, the price of the car is probably comparable to some, you know, relatively small homes out there.
Some relatively big homes.
Oh, okay. See, I'm used to California prices, so, you know, a one-floor apartment out here costs about twice as much as the Bentley. So.
No, my God. No. Yeah, these were, you know, I parked it in my girlfriend's parents' driveway, and it probably came pretty close to doubling their property value just by parking it in the driveway.
Just by the aura of the Bentley in the driveway.
They were actually really nervous to have it there, and I'm like, you know,
oh,
what?
I can imagine.
With the newer Bentleys, though, I don't think most people recognize really what they are. So I was like, you know, don't worry.
They don't have quite all the pomp and circumstance that, like, you know, when they were owned by Rolls or, I mean, even just a Rolls Royce, that, you know, that's a very, very kind of conspicuous vehicle. This one's a little bit more smoothed out and look as high end.
A Rolls
Royce. Which I don't think is a bad thing. There's a certain subtlety to it that's actually kind of a good thing. So
The Rolls Royce Phantom is just so larger than life. That would be something that just instantly draws attention to itself. But yeah, you're
absolutely
right. This is a lot more subtle. So yeah, you know, I only had it for 4 days. I didn't have it for the normal 7 days, which was fine. I mean, what are you going to do? Complain? But
no, but I want the extra damn 3 days.
Yeah, no, I made the most of it. I was driving literally all weekend long.
Good.
As I said in the article, as soon as they dropped it off in Cleveland, I immediately drove it away from my crappy high-rise apartments because I didn't want it anywhere near there, and took it down to a little bit nicer suburb of like central Ohio, central northern Ohio. Yeah, and it was a huge hit. So I drove. I went to a wedding. It was my girlfriend's brother's wedding, and I drove them away from the church because I didn't have a, like a really nice car to be driven away in. And
Right. Well, nice compared to the Bentley, but yeah.
it was. I mean, it was just one of those cars that just makes the moment, makes every moment, And honestly, driving it, I totally forgot that it was a $183,000 car. I mean, you can just drive it like a normal car and appreciate it that way.
Is it really that it could it be a daily driver, I
Oh,
guess, is the most
absolutely,
obvious question.
because the air suspension has four settings that range from comfort to sport. When you turn it to comfort, it gives it really kind of fluffy damping levels, so it's soaking up every bump left and right. But it also reduces the sensitivity of the throttle, like way down. And that's good because at every, stop sign or stoplight, you've got 551 horsepower, in So when you turn to sport or to comfort mode and it kind of retards the sensitivity of the throttle, you can accelerate you can accelerate so smoothly that no one can tell you're driving such a powerful car. And my girlfriend gets sick. She says she's gonna throw up every time I turn the wheel a little fast or accelerate a little fast.
That
And
sounds really familiar, but anyway.
oh yeah. For car guys, it's like that's such a curse.
Yeah, no, that is the quintessential buzzkill for any guy behind the wheel.
Yeah, but anyway, with that on, she couldn't tell a thing, and you could drive it so smoothly, like literally chauffeur smooth.
Right. The one comment that you and I actually talked about this when you got it and you put it up in the post as well was the fact that you got it down to the sport mode and you said it was a back road carver, which I'm still astounded by a vehicle that weighs, what, close to 3 tons, or yeah, about 3 tons, that's still got a level of performance on the back roads is just astonishing.
Well, I mean, keep in mind it has so much hardware on its side. It
Right.
has the all-wheel drive, and it has this variable damping suspension.
Right.
I
By the way, do we have any idea what the torque split is on the all-wheel drive system?
I don't. It's continuous, so I think it monitors it.
Right.
It goes to whatever. It's probably it might be 50-50 for all I know,
Right.
or I would say maybe it's biased towards the rear, but.
Okay.
You know what? Another hard thing was a lot of people were like, "Oh, at what point does it understeer?" And it's like I'm in middle of Ohio. I can't test at what point a 550 horsepower car understeers,
Well, as good as your photos were, and they were really, really good, we were all waiting with bated breath for that big smoky burnout photo you're going to produce for us, and it never came. So a
No,
lot of us were
I
kind
don't.
of disappointed.
I have to go to burnout school because I cannot do a burnout to save my life, and I'm ashamed. I'm
No,
ashamed.
it's quite all right. Honestly, having talked to enough piston heads by now, you'd be surprised the number of people that haven't done donuts and haven't done burnouts in their cars.
Yeah,
So,
exactly. I
yeah.
need to. Aren't there people out there who put like the McDonald's trays under their rear tires,
Oh yeah, no,
front
that's like
wheel
the training
drivers?
wheels of
Yeah.
donuts. Yeah,
See, I need to start there and just work up.
work your way up from there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you enjoyed it thoroughly, I'm sure.
I did. And Bentley said it wouldn't be our last,
Oh, very good.
so
Very
hopefully
good.
there'll
Send one over
be.
to California. Then the obvious question is it worth the money? I mean, you've driven enough vehicles by now, and there's some really, really nice high-end, Benzes, BMWs and such. Do you think that it justifies the price premium?
Yes, I do. I do. And I'll say because for one, the engine is strong. I mean, it is seriously powerful. And Bentley has done enough to it to make it its own, even though it's based on, the W8 architecture and Audi and VWs. This is they've gone over the top in terms of making it an 11-tenths of a car. I mean, if a Phaeton or Phaeton or an A8 or an S Class or a 7 Series, if that's a 9 out of a 10 car, this is like it just cranks everything up two notches.
Nice.
But then again, in my head, I think if I'm rich enough to buy a $90,000 S Class,
Yeah.
and I'm considering a Bentley, I mean, all bets are off. I mean, it's so hard to recommend a car at that point because it's
Yeah,
got to
and
hit
then
on all cylinders. And the only
right.
the major thing I dinged the Bentley for was the navigation system, which was, I mean, there are truly better navigation systems
Well,
on
you said it was
$30,000
antique,
cars.
if I recall, yeah.
Yeah.
And see, I think that's I guess where I'm kind of angling towards is once you start getting into this price range, the upper 100K, is there really do people even care? Because what's the upgrade from the Continental Flying Spur? What's the one
To
above that?
the Arnage.
The Arnage. Once you get into that realm, because the Arnage is only maybe another $50,000, does it even make a difference to somebody that's going to drop that kind of coin on a vehicle? Is 50 grand going to make any difference at all?
Well, I would choose. I mean, I would choose either. I would choose the Continental series over the Arnage any day because they're more powerful, they're more modern, and the Arnage. I mean, the Arnage is based on a very old car. In
Yeah.
today's terms, just today they announced the 2007 version in its most powerful form would make 500 horsepower from a twin turbo V8, and in the Flying Spur you have a more modern design, more modern hardware,
Right.
making 551 horsepower from a twin turbo W12. So I
At a price discount, no
at a price
less. So,
discount,
yeah.
yeah. So I mean, I personally I would choose that. However, like I said, at this price range, you have to be firing on all cylinders, and it is possible if, I mean, I haven't tested too many $150,000 plus cars, but if I found one that did everything the Bentley did and let's say had a whole navigation entertainment setup that I liked more,
Yeah.
that would be a swaying point. I mean, that would be, I would have
Is
to
that
say to
important?
myself, if I'm spending $180,000, do I have to deal with a CD-ROM based navigation system?
Right.
But
Thankfully, these are problems you and I are never going to have to deal with, but
Right.
we
And
can
I mean,
dream.
Bentley already replaced that navigation system with a DVD-based one for 2007.
Oh, cool.
But I don't think it's a touchscreen still, which I still think they should address. I mean, like I said, you could get in a Lincoln a Zephyr, you could get a better navigation system than most cars costing three times as much, so.
Well, speaking about three times as much, our man Frank
Our new man,
has been
Frank.
our new man Frank, I should say, is has been relentlessly flogging one of the great vehicles of the 21st century, I think, the Koenigsegg CCX.
Yes, he I don't even know how it came about, but he somehow scored an invite to its US sales debut in Las Vegas at what was it called? Caesars.
Exotic cars at Caesar's
Yeah,
Palace.
exotic cars
Yeah.
at Caesars Palace. And like one day he tells me, "Oh, I'm going to this debut." And I'm like, "Sweet." The next day he says, "Oh, they're going to demonstrate it on the track the next day. We're going to that." A couple days later, calls back and says, "Oh, we just scored a ride and drive with it on the track the next day." And I'm like, "Man, are they gonna let you take it home?" And he said he was more nervous driving it than anything else he's ever
I
driven.
believe that. I believe that, especially on an area on a track. I mean, if you're driving on the roads, you're the common sense level is pretty high, but driving on a track, you could really, really push yourself a little bit too far beyond the limits of adhesion. So,
Yeah, he I talked to him after he got home from the whole event, and he said his legs 4 hours later were still shaking. The car,
That is what a car is supposed to do to somebody.
and
That's
apparently
phenomenal.
this is what this one did. It looks like an amazing car. I'm not too huge on the styling, but I find, I think with a lot of those supercars, it's really hard to find a blend of form and function.
Oh, definitely. No, it's and it's one of those things you have to either love it or you hate it. I think the Zonda is probably the prime example of that, where you've got this vehicle that some people just, adore the styling of it, and others are just kind of like it's a
Yeah,
really,
see, I love
really
the
weird
Zonda.
bird.
I think
Yeah,
there's
and
a.
I've never been particularly partial to it,
There you
so
go.
yeah, right there. But no, the CCX, it's got that, I don't know, if it would have came out in like 1994,
Oh, it
it
would have
would
been the
have it
bomb. It
exactly.
would have been the bomb.
12 years later, I don't think it could quite hold its own,
Yeah.
but I mean,
Like
you
when.
can't deny the performance of
It
it. That's
would have been great head to head with, like, the Diablo when it first came out.
yeah, and I was going to say that they don't look that surprisingly different
Yeah,
either.
exactly. So that was
So
cool. I mean,
he enjoyed it, yeah, and we've got some really great photos up. So if anybody hasn't checked that out yet, make
hopefully we'll
sure you
have a
check them
video up
out.
soon too. I'm working on that.
And also, this was the car that was driven around the Top Gear test track.
Yeah,
So
isn't it number one on the
he's
list?
touched a vehicle that's been piloted by the Stig, and that's enough for plenty of cocktail induced bragging. But
I
anyway,
thought I heard somebody say it was number one on the Top Gear list. for the show?
It's the last season. They originally put it on there without the rear wing,
Oh,
and
that's
the
right,
Stig
that's
took it
right.
off course, and then they fitted the rear wing. And I'm actually looking at the photo right now, and it's got the little kind of small carbon fiber wing on there, and it said fastest time on the test track, which I don't remember what the time was, but I'm sure well deep into the 120s. I don't remember anymore, but I used to keep track of them. But anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to get those. I mean, you can find those shows on the internet, but I'm so busy now, I don't have the time to download them and watch them. So, but let's move on to the next topic, which
Please.
is we're gonna go from a Bentley and a CCX to the Ford Crown Victoria. It's a natural transition.
Yeah, and very,
Come
very
along with
smooth,
us.
definitely.
Well, the only reason the Ford Crown Victoria has been in the news recently, well, there's two reasons. One is because a Law and Order magazine, I think that's the name of it, Law and Order magazine, reported, and it sounded kind of off the cuff, that Ford is working on a new model of the Crown Victoria.
Right, which is contrary to everything we've heard so far, that they were
Right.
going to kill it off and what have
Right.
you.
And it's based on the same Panther platform, so it's going to be the same rear-wheel drive platform,
Which has been around for
ever.
30 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, it'll be out in 2009, which seems awfully soon. But
Does it really?
to me, yeah, I mean,
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. I
The
guess I.
platform's really already there. I figured that, 2009 seemed a little bit too far down the line, but
Well, I mean, what are we expecting? Are we expecting, like, refreshening, or are we expecting, like, a completely new car?
I'm expecting just a refreshing. As
Oh,
long
well.
as the parking lights are still in the middle so you can identify the car when it's coming up on you, that's all that really matters to me. But
I hope it's not true. I hope they let the platform go. They find another rear-wheel drive platform to make their bitch, and they go with it for the next 30 years. And well, and I'll tell you, I did a post yesterday on the plant that makes the Crown Victoria. It's the St. Thomas plant, in Ontario, and it is on a list of 14 plants that is going to be closed as part of the Way Forward plan. And so, I mean, that's pretty much where everyone got the clue that the Ford Crown Victoria was going to be
Was going to be
canceled,
killed off, right?
right? But the plant made some news because they just, the UAW of, or the, I should say, the Canadian Auto Workers,
Right.
with the plant, just sent a proposal into Ford. Basically, it was their bid to build the next, or the upcoming Ford small car, the B segment
Okay.
car.
Right.
And we've heard rumors that Mexico, a plant in Mexico, might build it. Of course, there are many plants in North America that could probably do it. But the plant that gets that car is probably going to become the flexible manufacturing plant that Ford talked about when they originally announced the Way Forward. Whichever plant becomes that is going to be the plant with, like, hella long-term security. I mean,
Right.
they're going to be able to build anything.
Smart Canucks there.
Right. So, and then they also threw in, I guess, a supplier, Magna, would also build an accompanying building to build more Ford cars there.
Oh, wow.
So apparently it's a pretty sweet deal. They gave it to Ford. No word on, what Ford thought of it, or where it's going to go. If that happened, perhaps, that would make me believe more that the Ford Crown Vic would be either continued or completely
Right.
redesigned and built there. But
It's one of those things that just based off the sources we got, which we pulled it from a couple different websites. I'm still a little bit hazy about it. I'm not entirely sure. We threw it up there. I should have titled it, in the rumor mill. But it seems like Ford would be really, really, really doing themselves a lot of harm if they took away this really, really huge fleet customer of theirs, because I think you and I were talking about this, and actually one of the Lost podcasts was the fact that just taxi drivers and cops, and that makes up that segment. It's very, very rare that you see a Crown Vic or a Grand Marquis being driven. Well, they're not rare, but it doesn't happen very much, but you see it all over the place with these fleet customers.
I think Ford should build a factory that just produces the Crown Vic and the Lincoln Town Car forever,
And that's
with, like, no changes. Just produce them forever, because they would have hundreds of thousands of fleet customers every year just for that.
Yes, absolutely.
Just for that. It could just, why don't they just have a fleet factory? It could build the Taurus, the it could build all the fleet customers instead of dragging down the resale value of everybody else's car,
Right.
and
Just use these
constant source of
staples of
income. Yeah.
automobiledom, and that's it.
Because you're right, if they ever change the Crown Vic, if they do ever cancel it, What is the taxi industry going to do? You
Exactly. And
know?
the talk was, when we posted on it before, that the Charger was going to take up the slack, but it's not as big. It doesn't have all the accoutrements that are expected.
Yeah.
And of course, the other major thing, which actually one of our commenters posted on this, was the fact that the Crown Vic being a body on frame, especially for the police, is really, really beneficial, because if they do, smack into people, which I guess they do on a pretty regular basis, it doesn't do any damage to the frame, where you've got a unibody and they've got to worry about frame bending and all that. With a body on frame, they just replace the body panels, get them fixed, and they're on their way. So I thought that was kind of an interesting insight, and I'd love to give credit to the guy that brought it up, but I don't remember his
That is
tag.
a very good point. And you know, that was one of the reasons why front wheel drive police cars never, you know, they never really take off anywhere. You know, they can be used for cruising, but you can't go ramming that guy in the chase to stop him with it, or you're going to destroy your car. Did I mention, it might have been in one of the last podcasts, or before then, that I had a hybrid Ford Escape taxi in New York
Yes,
City?
you did mention that in the last podcast.
And it was, I'll tell you one thing, much, much smaller than a Crown Vic.
Oh, I
Like,
believe that.
that's the first thing you notice. And you're like, okay, first of all, they're way more expensive to buy. They're smaller. Yes, they get way better gas mileage. You know, the kind of driving they're doing, it's perfectly suited for the hybrid, but there's no way it's going to replace the Crown Vic. I mean, the Crown Vic is purpose built to be a taxi. I mean, it's purpose built.
No, it is the staple fleet car. So
I can't
Ford.
see how Ford could ever say we're gonna replace, unless they redesign it with that whole segment in mind. You know?
We can hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still think it's gonna be. I think it's gonna be canceled, but I just can't imagine how they can cancel it and leave
No,
those people out to
and
dry.
justify it to themselves, yeah.
Whatever. All right, time to move on.
Yeah.
This was kind of surprising. I ran across this today on a website called Motoring File, which is
That's the
kind of like
Mini
an
specific website.
yeah, Mini specific website,
Yeah.
and they were reporting that the Mini is going to get BMW's iDrive,
Or
which,
some variant of it, yeah.
yeah, it's kind of like a detuned iDrive, which is a good thing.
Yeah. You know what, I before the inevitable dissing of iDrives comes in, I gotta confess, I've only used one car with iDrive, and that was being in the passenger seat. I've actually never used it behind the wheel, and I didn't think it was that bad. But once again, I don't have the experience that a lot of other people have. But it just seems, I don't know, it seems like an additional thing that the Mini might not need. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'll say that any car that has a complicated like electronic system,
Yes.
give me 4 to 7 days and I'll get it. It doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it doesn't matter
Right.
how complicated the iDrive
Right.
is, I'll eventually get it.
Unless you're 92 and you're not used to it, then yeah.
Right. You're right, and quite frankly, I've never used the iDrive. I just go off the
Okay.
reports of what people say.
Yeah.
But I have used, you know, a lot of systems I don't like, that don't have these controllers. And like I said,
When you had the
eventually.
Audi, or pardon me, when you had the Audi A3, did that have the MMI interface?
No, it didn't, but it had a
Okay.
crappy navigation system, so that
Okay.
was, you know, instantly what popped up in my head.
Right.
And so basically, I don't think this is like a bad thing. The weird thing about the Mini is that it has a joystick instead of a dial, a
I
really small
noticed that
joystick.
on the photo, yeah.
That's kind of, I think that's kind of dangerous, 'cause that when I think of joystick, I think of something getting, you know, snapped off 'cause you throw your jacket in the
Right.
back or something like that. But it sounds like the Mini's version is going to be kind of decontented, because all of the HVAC controls, heating,
Are
ventilation, air
still
conditioning.
actually tactile flicking switches, that kind of thing.
Right, which is good.
Yeah.
I think I like that. I like that a lot.
Well, no, that's always been my problem with most of the heavily computer-based systems, is when it comes down to two things, the radio and the climate control. I don't want anything interfering with it. I want to be able to flick a switch. I want to be able to turn it on. I don't even like the set programmed temperature, where you just set it to 74 and it does it for you. That drives me up a wall too. So anything
It's
where you're taken away,
so hard though, 'cause for, you know, premium vehicles, that kind of automation is expected. I mean, I agree with you. I am fine getting into a $15,000 to $20,000 car and having rotary knobs. You know, I think that's so simple and elegant, you know, it just works and it works so
Right.
effectively. And then you get into a $60,000 car with all these techno gadgets and it takes you 10 minutes to get it to the temperature you want.
Exactly.
And I totally agree with you, but at the same time, if I get into a $60,000 car, I want a little something something, you know, something
Oh,
cool.
no doubt. Well, and that's kind of the problem they have is they're trying to cram so much technology in, but
Right.
you can only have so many buttons and switches. So the easiest way to kind of streamline it and simplify it is to, throw one big controller in there and you can search through menus. But like I said, I hope it finds a place in the Mini that doesn't deter from anything else that the Mini does so well. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. I think we reported on it just because it's fun to
No, it's
it's
news, no doubt
it,
about that.
well it's fun to diss on the iDrive. It's, you know, it's just like a little pastime. But what was I going to say? I one thing I think is I always say this is that touchscreens are so important to navigation systems now.
Yes.
Because if you have to enter an address, there is no good way to do it with a dial or
Right.
two buttons or
No,
whatever.
absolutely
You
not.
have to be able to punch it in on the screen.
Right.
That's why, like, any navigation system that doesn't have a touch screen, I know it's going to be a pain. But I'll end it there and go on to the next piece of technology news we have, which
Right.
is really weird.
Yeah, it's one of the odder posts I've seen in the last week or so.
Yeah, very much so. It's basically Toyota is going to make a cell phone.
Right.
I guess Toyota owns 11% of a company called, what is it, KDDI?
I've just been pronouncing it Kitty all day, so yeah,
Kitty?
KDDI, sure.
Kitty. And together with this company, Kitty, they are going to make a cell phone called the Timo, TIMO. And the ultimate goal being, you know, to kind of marry the cell phone and the car together a little bit better than they are right now with, you know, the whole cell phone industry being segregated from the auto industry.
Right.
So I really like seeing, you know, a player in both of these industries get together and say, okay, obviously people are using these two items together frequently. We need
Right.
to, you know, smooth out that that integration.
Well, the problem that was brought up, and once again, getting back to some of the commenters, is the fact that, each company's got their own proprietary thing going on. And aside from Bluetooth, there's really no hard and fast way of integrating the car with your phone. So, I mean, I don't I guess my biggest concern is Toyota's going to have now another proprietary software and setup, and that's going to further kind of fragment the market as far
Well,
as that's concerned.
if Toyota, you know, Toyota could take one route and say, we'll develop this and we'll license it out to everybody. And
Yeah.
I don't know why more automakers don't do that. I mean, Toyota does do that. They do it with their Synergy, drive assist, their
Right.
hybrid. You know, you could do it with this and say, look, we developed a good system to integrate cell phones. It'll work on, if they could make it work on any cell phone, and they should because all cell phones have SIM cards. That
Right.
store all your data. As a matter of
Well, that's what
fact,
they have over in Europe. You just throw your SIM card into the car and it automatically, I think the new Boxer has that as well too, yeah.
actually the Bentley had it. And I tried it and couldn't get it to work.
Oh.
But I did
But that
get
was par for the course of the navigation system and all
yeah.
that, so yeah.
I did get the Bentley the Bluetooth phone to work in the Bentley, which was wicked cool.
I
It's, you
believe
know,
it.
just to have your cell phone sitting there just talking. You know, your friend's voice blasted through the stereo. It worked really well. And I guess the main goal, what was weird in this post about the Toyota cell phone was that they were going to develop a battery pack that attached to the armrest of a car and offered music and game downloads. I don't even understand what that means. I can't even imagine what that is. Like a battery
Yeah,
pack.
I can understand music. Well, the battery pack thing is just confusing as is, and then I can understand music, but why are you going to download games to your
Yeah, and like, does it
car?
hook into? Is it like an attachment to the phone, or
Right.
is it part of the car, or do you take it with you? And then, I don't know. That was weird. It kind
Yeah,
of
no,
sounds like they're
it's
describing a docking station, which I think would be cool, like a universal docking station for a phone. But that's the problem with cell phones, is every
There's nothing
manufacturer has a
universal.
different setup. Yeah.
Right. No, my third or fourth car, which I'm almost kind of ashamed to admit, was a Ford Taurus. It was a good car, but you popped open the armrest, it kind of folded forward, and there was a place for one of the old school flip phones, which was great, but I bought that car 3 years after the old school flip phones just went out of style. So you've got this, relatively nice piece of technology with a speaker underneath and all that stuff, and yeah, it
It's
was
completely not
kind of
usable.
worthless. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
That really sucks about the cell phone industry. But you look at the MP3 player industry, the digital music player
Right.
industry. Same thing. No
But that's
standardization.
been so dominated
But
by
the
iPods that,
iPod
yeah,
has 80%
that's the
of the
thing, is
market.
they're sucking up so much of the marketplace that maybe Microsoft's edition or whatever, but this could turn into a whole other podcast talking about that. So, but yeah, no, we need to have some way of integrating, and Bluetooth looked like the answer. I'm just looking forward to Bluetooth being equipped with every car, being able to add it in the aftermarket cheaply.
Yeah, Bluetooth probably would have died if the car industry hadn't come along and said, we want to hook up to cell phones, because Bluetooth in the computer industry was kind of just
It
stagnant.
wasn't it didn't
And
grab really, really fast, but at the same time, I mean, you just the wireless headset craze that's going on right now. I mean, that I
wireless
think
headset,
probably
wireless keyboards, wireless mice, it's
exactly,
so
yeah.
good for
That
that. Yeah.
oh, no doubt, no doubt.
All right, we're totally
Well,
off the
before we
topic of
start
cars.
talking about a tech walk, yeah, exactly.
Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of this show. We've gone a half
Yeah.
hour. I think that's enough of us rambling.
Definitely.
Before we leave, though, again, want to give Volvo, who are sponsors of the Autoblog podcast, a chance to say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, we're back to wrap it up. Just as always, want to mention to everybody, please go visit the autoblog.com website, where we have posts going up all day long. Literally check back every hour and you'll find something new. And you can also check out this podcast, subscribe to it in iTunes. Just do a search for Autoblog and you should find us in there. And hopefully, we're trying a couple new technical things with the podcast, so hopefully it's stable now and we can produce it fine with no hiccups, no lost episodes.
All be right in the world, yes.
Yeah, all will be right in the world. So until next time, everybody have a good week.
Take care.